Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guests, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we have a new author. Her name is Tessa Lord, and the book we will be talking about today is We Are One. Many times we've heard this conversation over the past decade of there's an awakening, spiritual awakening. Who are we? Where we are in the universe? What are we made out of? What's going on in the world? Why am I feeling disconnected? Why am I feeling connected? Oh my gosh, I don't know where I'm at. All of the things that I used to know in the past are now thrown caution to the wind. And we say, do we need control? Do we need to hold on to things? Do we have to have such a hard attachment? And are we still stuck to that tether line by our little toe? We just never know these days. But one thing we do know for sure, life is evolving. No longer is it a picket fence. You have to have four cars and two kids, and they all have to go to a religious school, and everybody needs to be dressed nice for church on Sunday. The world has evolved tremendously over the last 100 years. And I myself, you know, growing up in the 50s and 60s, remember a lot of concepts and thoughts about how life should be. You know, I grew up with dog-eat-dog world. You got to get to the top. How many numbers are you going to get, you know, letters behind your name? And you always have to have that success thing. And it's almost like, you know, push, 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 push. And where are we pushing to? Just recently, we've also spoken on the radio about the concept of those were the decades of finding outside of yourself and how you were reacting and acting to the world around you. Now we seem to be in a more centering spot where we are learning more about what's inside of us. And that is the conversation we'll take up with Tessa. Tessa, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, I am delighted that you have invited me to be on, Dr. Jeanette. Thank you so much.
So, Tessa, don't you think the world has evolved? You also, of age, are able to say that you can see these patterns and maybe we're starting to reflect on them and go forward, yes?
Yes, and I am so excited that finally people are starting to be more evolved. That's the word for it. They're lifting up their consciousness. They're realizing that things are just not the way that they think they are. And that's a spiritualization concept.
Mm-hmm. And you know what the best part about it is, too, is that they are having less fear about it. There seems to be more of people behind them. You know, if we had the concept of intuitives and psychics and channelers back in the early 50s, 60s, 70s, people would kind of say, oh, it's that crazy lady on the corner, or, oh, you know, that's against my religion, I don't do it, or... well, maybe I don't understand what they're trying to say. And now we've come so far forward that we started to learn not only the voices that others may be sharing with us, but also the voices in our own heart and soul, our own spirit, you know, our own thoughts, and start listening to that instead of the chatter of about what we think we should be saying. Yes?
Absolutely. I know for myself, I'm a lifelong meditator and yoga practitioner. Besides being an artist and a writer, and I just listen to the interior voice. I've come to trust it. I've come to see that when I ask questions, I get answers. And I think that the general population is also following this suit that perhaps those of us who grew up in the 50s and 60s were the ones who broke through the barriers. We were the ones who were introduced to Eastern thought, Paramahansa Yogananda coming to the spirit. So early, TM, I was initiated into TM in like 68. And the more you meditate, you start to grasp more of what's going on that can't be really called logic or intellectualized. It's more of an experiential experience, and you come to trust that voice within.
You know, it's interesting when we think about this. Many people say, you know, well, do you meditate? How long? What time? Do you do it this way? Do you do it that way? And it's like, I have pretty much, I will say, been connected my whole life. I really believe that the things that I've done, the things that I've gone forward with, I've trusted and I've been able to do that. And to me, I didn't need to have that prescribed time so that I could show loyalship, or I didn't have to have the prescribed time so I could check off the box that I did it for the day, you know? It pretty much became, it was in my being, in my way of life, and I'm sure as you're saying also, it was in your life too. Because I think sometimes people say, well, you know, a lot of mindfulness is going around now, that, you know, the fad word, and everybody says, oh, I did that from 8 to 8:30. At 8:35, their cell phone's ringing, and they're the same as they were yesterday, and so much for that mindfulness, right?
I love the fact that they have apps out now for meditation. I just think it's such a goof. I love it, to tell you the truth, that it's become such a fad, because the more the people do, the more conscious our society will be, and the better off we'll all be, even those who have no connection with a higher consciousness. So they'll look around and they'll be affected by everybody else having raised their consciousness up. So I know when I started meditating, I had quite a few issues, and I needed to do kind of a regular practice to break through my barriers. I had a lot of fear. I had a lot of, I think, neuroses, they could easily be called, as a teenager. And actually, the book that's coming out in November is a lot more about exploring how to eliminate the fears and anxieties through specifically the practices of yoga and meditation, although today we're talking about another book. But my own life experience began with needing to have a regular practice. And today I'm more like you. I can just plug in basically through my breath at any minute. And I also do what's called japa, which is the repetition of a silent mantra that keeps my mind pretty much in the meditative groove as much as I want it to be.
Yeah, and I think that too, the concept of being open. So many are saying, you know, it's challenging my thoughts. I'm not sure if I'm ready to go there. And while we are bringing out all these new books, I speak a lot on the radio shows, and we kind of are bringing out these ideas. We're saying, just listen, just hear a word, just say, oh, that sounds interesting. Oh, that turns something in my head. Oh, that doesn't make me feel good, but I'll explore it. And I think about being open to everything that's out there is really all about the idea, because, you know, eventually you're going to have to open. I mean, there's just going to be no other way, because it will be the way, because everybody's open now. So in other words, if you sit down at a table of 10 people, you know, when we talk about openness or mindfulness, you're going to have a good ratio over 50% that know what you're talking about. So we will become much more in touch with who we are and how we're working in the world and how we are helping each other. I think that's really the concept, Jess.
Yes, and people who have not yet experimented with stopping the thoughts, they have a fear, as I did when I was younger, before I became a meditator. I said, why do I want to stop the process of thinking? Because I'm an artist. I want to have original thoughts. I want to come up with really great ideas that nobody else has, or at least present them in a new and different manner. And so I resisted, but yet what happened with me was I was in such mental turmoil at one stage of my life where I was actually forced to do something, or else I probably would have gone off the deep end. And that's also how I got into yoga, because I have a very bad case of scoliosis. So at the age of 18, I finally tried yoga because the pain was so unbearable, and I got instant relief. And the same with meditation. My mental turmoil was so consuming me that I took a friend's advice, and I became an initiate of TM at the time, although I do a different form of meditation now. And instantly, I mean, it was instantly, it was like taking a pill. My mind was released from the prison of this horrible crunch, which was anxiety and fear and worry and all those other really negative energy things that put us in a prison of our own.
I think sometimes that train that we want to get off is the imprints that were from our past. You know, it's sort of, if we could just cut off all of that stuff and those sentences that we knew, and then what is ahead of you is, I call it the bag of 27 letters. You now have a way to create your new life going forward, you know, because before it's something that you recognize, you've heard it before, you've said it before, it keeps overplaying, you know, that kind of mantra goes on in your head. And when you can disconnect from that and you're given 27 letters, wow, what could you do with that, right?
Exactly. And in yoga, the letters are called the Matrika Shakti. There's a specific type of energy that has a name, the Matrika Shakti, that is about words. And they start with the letters of the alphabet. It doesn't even matter what the words are, but they start off with the letters. And the words that we make out of the letters are the stories that we tell ourselves. So, yes, some of us had very negative stories that we either had to negate or heal. And in my case also, there was a time when there was an unknown type of fear that I was dealing with that could not be ascribed to one incident or my past or anything. And I do believe that when we come into this incarnation, that our soul has imprints on it. That's my belief, because I've experienced that myself. And meditation just seems to be a wonderful remedy for people who want to have peace of mind. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I think it's sort of like if you don't feel well, I think meditation is almost like the sun. You know, it's always going to show up. It's always there for strength and support. It'll always warm you, and it never lets you down, you know. So I think with meditation, it's kind of the same similar situation, because you're sitting in presence, you're calling upon something, and you're calling upon yourself to say, where am I? I'm not out there. I'm not spinning around. I'm not out there, you know, doing whatever. I'm in this moment. And then you really bring it into focus.
Yes, and that is why in the scriptures from the ancient times, they referred to consciousness as light. It's actually a Sanskrit word called chit. Chit and Satchitananda is the way that it's explained what happens in meditation. Sat means knowledge. Chit is the light of knowledge. And Ananda is bliss. So when we go to that state of not letting our thoughts rule our consciousness, our mind, so to speak, then we experience bliss, because the light of consciousness has filled us with this enormous font of just endless inspiration. It's just an incredible thing as an artist to experience, and I've tried to memorialize it in paintings and drawings and writing about it. It's an incredible subject.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because yesterday I was working with a client with, she has two end-of-life family members that I'm working with. And when we talk about it, and it's like, how exponential can you get about seeing all the potential around this, you know? And so many will say, no, it's death, they're sick, it's bad, you know? And when I work with clients, it's like, we're going to take this the other realm, you know, and it's like, it's time. Can we let go? Can we create butterflies? Can we let their body drift and know that they're still existing? Can we still know that life goes on, kind of idea? And I think also, too, so I do that with words and visualizations and helping clients. And you did it in your book as We Are One with your paintings and your inspirational. And I think that's what many will be drawn to, is they'll say, I'll just read this few little sentences and look at the picture and then sit back and just let it be. And that's really what your book is best about, is you can open it up to any page, and just that page for that moment could be what would work for you, yes?
Yes, each page of the book is a meditation that I hope people will take the time to dive into, because it merits it. When there is a thought that is a very deep thought, like a meaningful and also pleasurable thought, it
right.
should be relished. Excuse me. Like a good meal. A good meal should not be gulped.
Mm-hmm.
A meal, you want to savor it. And the same thing when you're experiencing something in your consciousness. When my father was leaving the planet, I was at his bedside, and I actually was given a gift by him because he was doing some kind of travel with his soul. And it sounds very bizarre, but that's how I explained it at the beginning of my book, We Are One. And it inspired me to paint about this subject. So basically what the message was, he experienced oneness. He left his body, and he came back when he was able to speak with words. He said, "Isn't it amazing that some of us don't realize it until it's too late that we are one?" And when he said that, I said, "Thank you, thank you, thank you, my dear father, for giving me the lesson that I actually suspected all along, ever since I was a child, but I'd never had proof." Because it's like the thing when we're looking for God, like, okay, who am I? Where's
mm-hmm.
God? How can we believe? Well, okay, but where's the proof? And there's my father, who left his body very shortly after giving me that message. And as he was coming back more into consciousness, I explained to him, I said, "Dad, did you remember what you said to me?" He said, "No, what happened?" Because he was definitely between the two worlds. He had left his body. And so he said, what's going on? What did I say?" And I told him that exactly what he said, that isn't it too late? It takes some of us so long to figure it out that we are one. He said, "No kidding. Really? I said that?" And so I comforted him, and he gave me the gift of proof of something that I had been searching all my experiences. That's why we meditate, actually, because we do experience oneness in meditation. I just could not believe this holy exchange that went down with my father's passing. And so it was a blessing. It was a real gift for me to be able to be there and receive, and also to give him the comfort, because he was basically pretty afraid of taking the final step and letting go. And he needed to hear that.
Yeah. I think we have such hard, fast concepts of what we believe because we have to see validation. We have to have it etched in stone, and it needs to be reproducible. In other words, if I start once and it's going to happen that same way twice, it's going to happen that way again on the third try. You know, we get so stuck in that we miss all of the beauty of the moment. And gosh, we miss quite a bit, I think, in that process. Many times people will say, "Oh, I went and had a surgery done, and we thought everything was fine, and then it happened again. I had to have another one." And you look at them and you say, well, maybe in the first one you were trying to control the outcomes. Maybe in the second one you just allowed to let it happen what would be. You know, I think sometimes we get so stuck that we're afraid to say that there are other ways out there, or maybe the things just won't show up like we want them to be. You know, sometimes I think someone had said to me at one time, I just don't let my life just float by. I write out things, I make my plans, and I step into them, and I'm going, okay. And they're like, well, you can't just let your life just go by. And it's like, you know, and the same person was also having issues with validity. They kept saying, am I validated? And I'm going, gosh, you know, what are you trying to control, you know, instead of being free? And I think your book, again, We Are One, really shows and guides people to be free and to be able to release some of those ideas. I think that's important, and especially to release our creativity about our life, because it's not all black and white, and it's not going to be set in stone, right?
No, and it's funny that you mentioned this about being flexible. I am a yoga teacher also. I only teach once a week because I'm so busy with my writing and arting. But last night I chose the theme. I always have a theme around which we concentrate as we do our different practices. And I chose spontaneity. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because to me, even a yoga person can get stuck in their rut and, you know, doing the same routine over and over, and your body just becomes hardened and cemented, and it's not good. It's much better to be spontaneous and to feel that life is a dance, and that our breath is like the orchestra leader, and that we just follow our bliss. And it may sound a little corny, but it can really reflect in our attitudes about just everything in general, to having a conversation with a person, not insisting on my concept rather than listening to your concept, not wanting to be talked over or I've got the more important thing to say, or whatever those things are that makes having conversation more challenging with certain people than with others who are more spontaneous, more flexible, and more kind and embracing.
Because we're really going towards listening. And listening means that you engage. You know, you want to engage with people. You don't want to be controlling and, you know, aloof, or more or less, you know.
Get rid of your ego also. When you're a listener, you can't be projecting. Well, I'm going to say this as soon as she's finished. you have to be wide open.
You know, it's funny because I've always said on the show, people would say, well, I don't understand what you're saying, maybe if I said a concept or something. And I would say to them, throw glitter in the air and just think about all of that. And they'll say, what do you mean? And it's so, you know, when you throw glitter in the air, those are all the potentials that are out there. They reflect the light. It's something that draws your attention to it. It's almost like you would say also, too, it's your creativity. It's your options that are out there. It's just we sometimes get so stuck we can't think that there might be another option, right?
It's exactly that, and it boils down to what you said earlier about the 26 letters. When we communicate, each one of us has a choice of how to throw together those 26 letters, which words we're going to make with them, and in what sequence we use them. And then we're trying to just put together an idea, but each one of us does it so totally different that it's not just this prescription. Oh, well, when she answers that question, it has to be, you know, noun, predicate, and phrase. And it's a wonderful thing to contemplate because all my life I've always been a writer and an artist. And I've thought a lot about the fickleness of words, how you can't really trust words because they mean something different to every single person who hears them. And recently, one of my spiritual teachers, I was at a conference and was a very old Benedictine monk. So obviously he was Christian, and he greeted his audience of 1,000 people. We were all very much in the mindfulness tribe, the presence tribe. And he said, I never use the word God. And that's because each and every one of you has a very strong attachment to what that word God means.
Right.
He says, I prefer to use the word spirit, which doesn't have all these connotations and, you know, just raft with violence, too, from history and all sorts of wars and wars of words, wars of ideas, wars of control. So this beautiful old guy, he was so wonderful. He used the word spirit. And ever since then, I like when I think about God, I like the acronym Good Orderly Direction because it is a tricky word. And there are many words that have to be explained.
Yeah, and, you know, I think I remember at one time I was having trouble trying to take all my writings because I've got thousands of pages of it over the years. And the publisher and editor says you need to have a common theme and start from the front to work to the back. And I it's totally impossible for me to do that. And impossible because each one is just a moment in time. And the only common thread is that I showed up for it. So I looked at it and I said, you know, what if I just did something different and wrote something different that worked for me? And they were like, oh, no, it's got to be this way, but it got to be that way. And I kind of went, okay, we're forgetting that. So then it all sat there, and it's been sitting there for like probably 10 years, and then I'm about ready to resurrect it again. But one day it was about, I think a month ago I had written something. And I had offered it to someone to read, and they said, oh, it just sounds like a stream of consciousness. You're everywhere. I didn't get it. And you know what? What I did was I looked up on the computer. I asked Google. I said, authors who write with a stream of consciousness. And I found all these famous writers, and I says, well, the heck with that then. Mine's going to go just like it is, you know, because yeah, we forget that these 27 letters, you know, we have people around us who want to silo us. I call S-I-L-O, want to put us in this silo so they can understand. Well, I'm not doing it for them to understand. I'm doing it because it's something I wish to share, and that's really two different concepts. And I think it's important now as we go forward, as we say, how can we share and offer things that sound different? Like just as your title of your book, We Are One, people will say, what? You know, but that's good because then it draws them in. It's something different, you know. If you had put a standard title on there, they'd have to read the description to be able to see if they've already read something similar. So really by opening up and offering and sharing these new ideas, I think that's what draws people in, yes?
You know, it's funny because I debated. I thought We Are One is almost too common in my world. I mean, I hear people say it all the time, but to me it is such an important mantra, especially after the experience I mentioned earlier about what my father's message was, that it has been the motivating force for my adult life. I think as a child, I experienced it without even, you know, being aware of the fact that there was something else besides oneness. I felt it when I was in a garden, especially when I was in the woods, when I was looking at little tiny insects, when I'm staring at clouds. You know how kids love to stare at clouds. There was just no separation in childhood. And then we start having the logical mind, and then we start dealing with the constructs of society and, like the silos that you speak of.
Right.
And we have to conform, and there's those of us who did not conform. I basically was a born rebel, and I'm conforming these days because I want to get things done. So you have to toe the line in conventional society, but I think that to be free and to be able to express oneself without any control is the true sign of an evolved spirit.
Yes.
And I have this concept that I worked with quite a bit in the second book that's coming out called In the I, meaning the I within, the me, myself, deep, profound I, that when we recognize that we don't have to control and we don't have to let anybody else control us, then we've entered the spiritual realm.
Right.
We have let go of those controls. And the people who have a hard time saying, spiritual, you know, there's a lot of people who just don't even want to hear that. Well, they tend to be people who really want their lives to be absolutely regimented, and they want to know that they are either in control or they've let somebody else control them, like the government or a political party or even football.
Right. Well, you know, Tessa, we've come to the end of our time. In closing, I think that I'd love to have you back for your other books, perhaps in the new year. That would be first.
Thank you so much. That'd be delightful.
And also, could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be wonderful.
Well, I call myself a spiritual activist, so I'm very involved in social media. I am on, with my name, T-E-Z-A, L-O-R-D. I am on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, and I also have a website, tezalord.com. And very soon, like I said, I will be getting out this second book, which I'm very excited about, so I would love to come back and talk to you as soon as you can have me.
Absolutely wonderful. Well, Tessa, you know, I think it's great that we just share the creative mind, and I think that's what your book does, We Are One, is it shares the creative mind, it shares that potential out there, and it does not have any restrictions on it. So in other words, your pictures can just allow someone to drift in thought, but also too, your words could just maybe just open the door. So I thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope everybody has a blessed and wonderful, fearless day.
Thank you so much. If you'd like to find out more information about Tessa Lord, her book again is We Are One. The link is on the bottom of today's show page, and you go directly to her website. Please do check it out. It is a wonderful book. It is something that perhaps you will say, you know, I've never experienced anything like this. And isn't that wonderful? It's all about the potential, and that's exactly where we're going. So thank you so much for joining us today, and have a wonderful day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.